You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 115. I am Sean DeRager, and with me, as always, is Brad Henderson.
What's up, man?
Goddamn. You and your yawns, man.
Hey.
I've seen every single episode now.
It's like Pavlov's dog. As soon as I hear the introduction, I just start falling asleep.
I just hear that as an utter dismissal of my existence as a human being.
Okay.
Also with us is BJ Colangelo. Welcome back.
I am so glad to be back. I have to think that Brad yawning is sort of like Carol Burnett pulling on her earlobe. Like, that's just become his trademark at this point.
I think so.
And it means I love you, Sean.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll buy that for a dollar.
If yawns mean I love you, then, dude, I love everybody when I'm at work because I am just yawn city, bitch.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I love my boss.
I love my computer. Co-worker. I love my shitty cubicle coworkers.
That annoys me.
They're not shitty. They're wonderful. Actually, I'm very lucky, but I yawn like a motherfucker. Anyway.
Every office has the people you can't stand or don't get along with, and the boss that gets on your case. But I can't complain about my job. Just in case any of you are listening. I love all you guys.
Nope.
All right, well, today we're going to be doing something a little bit different. We're going to run down do our What's on Our Doorstep, and then we are going to be talking about horror movie soundtracks. Well, maybe not all horror, but a soundtrack
lot.
Episode.
A lot of soundtracks.
So we'll dive into that in just a little bit, but
that's
first,
right.
But first, we need to figure out what's on our doorstep.
What's on your doorstep?
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
Alrighty. BJ.
Yes.
We'll let you go first.
Alright. So I've been gone for a couple of weeks, as you know. I have a couple of cool things to tell you before I tell you what's on my doorstep. Number one, one of the major reasons that I've been gone is because I've been in the middle of auditions and callbacks, and I am proud to announce that I will be playing the role of Catherine Martin in the Cleveland premiere of Silence, the musical, the unauthorized musical parody of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, wow.
So I finally get to achieve my goal of being a great big fat person. And I am fucking stoked. So that's why I've been gone, because I've been getting tweeted at by people that are like, where the hell are you? It's not the same without you. Okay, there's like two people that actually care, but to those two people, I got you. But I have gotten to watch a lot of cool stuff. The first one I'll touch on briefly, just because I know we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but I got this wonderful package from Vinegar Syndrome, and inside it was some sweet-ass pornography containing Let's Get Physical and Body Girls, which is just the best. But I'm not going to touch on that too much. Same thing with Disco Godfather. God bless you, Disco Godfather. I know we're going to talk more about that, but I'm just getting you all hyped to know that regardless of what Sean or Brad think about it, I think it's fucking awesome. And I can't wait to talk about it, probably in a couple of weeks. So yeah, Disco Godfather, super awesome. as far as things that are on my doorstep, there is a film, and I'm going to feel like such a shithead, whoever has IMDb up quicker,
Sean,
you have to look
Sean.
It up.
I don't have IMDb up.
Probably Sean. But there is this movie called Raging Hormones. I tweeted about this.
Oh, yeah,
I know,
totally.
Yeah, Brad tweeted about it with me. But I realized that I didn't talk about it. Like, I haven't been on to talk about it with you guys. Raging Hormones is a movie that feels like the ultimate love letter to John Waters film. It is about a guy who's on summer vacation before he's about to start college, and his family and his town, and how he inadvertently becomes the sex slave of, like, his town crush. And when I say town crush, I mean, like, she's that girl that you know is married or that has a boyfriend that you'll never get a chance to be with, but due to some crazy random happenstances, he gets to, you know, be the sub to this woman's dom. This movie needs to be seen by anybody who thinks that A, they like cult cinema, or B, they like John Waters films. I forgot how wonderful this film is. I forgot how funny it is, how well crafted it is. It's a blast. It's not the easiest thing to find. I mean, you can find it online, but if you think you're going to like pop it on Netflix or Redbox or wherever, you're probably not going to have much luck. But if you're totally cool with watching women with eye makeup like Divine walk around in tube tops and buy frozen meat, you're going to be really stoked about this film. It's fantastic. Highly recommend it. 10/10 all day. It's
you
great.
Had me at women buying frozen meat.
Oh, my God. She wears curlers in her hair the entire movie. She does her eye makeup like a cross between Mimi from The Drew Carey Show and Divine. Perfect. And she's in these tube tops, and she's got like she's, you know, a very voluptuous woman. She's built very much like Edith Massey. But she's just walking around buying meat from this man who has an accent that I can't place anywhere, and I don't ever want to try to because it's great. It's like French, but also Middle Eastern at the same time. I don't know what's going on there, but I'm real into it. And he's trying to like sell her pork loin, and it's like this weird, like creepy, erotic scenario. It's wonderful. It's so good. So yeah, Raging Hormones. Check it out. It's great. I also checked out in my adventures on Netflix a film called Tiger House. That's about my feelings on Tiger House. Is just ugh.
It has so much potential too.
I really, really wanted to like this movie because I am a total glutton for home invasion films because I am a complete spaz and like paranoid idiot, and I'm constantly fearful that someone's gonna break into my house and murder me. I'm just fascinated.
That's a fun way to live.
I know. It's completely normal. I don't need any help. I'm not in therapy. We understand. I'm fascinated by home invasion because it's a genre that feels like it only has one direction to go to, but then like you watch a film like The Strangers versus a film like Funny Games, and to me I feel like they're in completely different directions, and that's fascinating to me, is that you have this path that you really think there's only one way to go, and yet you still find new ways to get to that final destination. So I watched Tiger House. I had extremely high hopes, which is my own fault because I should know going into anything that is seemingly a Netflix exclusive that I'm probably going to be disappointed. But I figured, let's give it a try. It's not a Netflix exclusive, but like I heard pretty much nothing about it outside of its festival run. And then it, like, boom, appeared on Netflix.
Yeah, so, it like, came out on, I think Magnet put it out on Blu-ray or something. I was like, oh, that looks interesting.
Right, but, like, Magnet puts out a lot of things on Blu-ray that, like, don't hit the stores, that, like, you can only really get if you are a follower of Magnet releasing and what mm-hmm. they're doing. And I think Tiger House kind of fell into that, is that you really, unless you were, like, following their Twitter or following all of their new releases, you would have no fucking clue this movie even existed. With the exception of Netflix. So I watched it. I was sorely disappointed. It has so much potential because it's, you know, a home invasion film where, you know, there's like these two, like this couple that, you know, they're sneaking around to see each other kind of thing, and, you know, sneaks into the house and, you know, just happens to stumble upon the fact that they're being held hostage. And like that has like that log line, I'm in. I'm so fucking in. Sitting and watching them try to stretch that like really good idea into a like full length movie, unfucking bearable. And it just really bummed me out because I wanted it to be great and it's not. So.
Dude, those last 20 minutes are horrific. Because it's like, wait, this is a home invasion movie, but what? Like, plot are we actually trying to do now? And once you, like, find out, like, the true plot of it, it's just a total fucking eye roll.
To me, it feels like they didn't know how to end it, so they just kind of, like, took the first idea that came in their mind and ran with it, not thinking about logic or continuity or any of that. I don't hate it quite as much as I hate the ending of Mockingbird, but you and I will forever agree to disagree on that one.
If it ended like Mockingbird, I would have jizzed all over it.
But that's kind of how I felt about the ending of Tiger House. I was like, really? Are we still? Okay, fine. I'm not going to spoil the ending because I'm not an asshole. But yeah, Tiger House, no dice. So there's that. I rewatched Stranger Things again because why the fuck not? But I've already talked about it, so I'm not going to talk about it again. It's just, it continues to be something that is endlessly fascinating to me, if only for the conversations that it sparks. I will say that now that I've watched it for a third time, I am not so much Team Barb as I used to be. I actually kind of think that she's useless, and I don't know why I got swept up in the hype of why I thought Barb was awesome. Fuck Barb. She's kind of useless, and she's kind of a slut shamer, and I'm not down with that.
Oh, shit.
So, upon my third watch, my perspective of Barb has greatly changed. But the one that I really, really wanted to talk about, and, it might get a little personal, and if I burst into tears, I'm sorry. I will try to, like, say this as quickly and as painlessly as possible. One of my long time friends, and I've been friends with this person for 15 years, is going to die. She is losing her battle with cancer, and I know that I've talked plenty of times on the show before about my own battle, and it's, you know, causing all these different emotions, all this sort of weird survivor's guilt that I have. But I'm going to be going home this weekend to say, you know, my farewells to her, and it's really fucking with me a little bit. But I have so many incredible memories with this person. Her name is Amanda. I'm going to say her name. Her name's Amanda. She's one of the most incredible human beings I've ever been fortunate enough to have in my life. And of all the memories that we have together, one of them is that we used to be a part of this, like, little club, me and her and my best friend Elspeth and a couple other people, where once a week we would go to Blockbuster and we wouldn't even read the back of the box. We would just pick a movie based solely on its cover art, and we'd take it home and rent it. And for the longest time, we just would watch shit after shit after shit movie. Like, one of my personal favorite ones is this, like, shitty, I think it's called Slasher. No, it's just called Slash, like, just S-L-A-S-H. And it's about, like, a farmer, like, scarecrow serial killer thing. All I remember is at the end of it has a rock band singing about their experiences, and the tagline is them, like, super nu metal singing E-I-E-I-O. Like, so that gives you an idea of, like, the shit house movies we would bring home from the video store. But one of my strongest memories that I have growing up with Amanda is that she was so sick and tired of us just watching these shit movies that she said, you know what? Fuck it. This week we're watching 13 Ghosts. None of us have seen it, but you know what? If it came out through a movie theater, then it has to be good. So I rewatched 13 Ghosts. Not the original, the remake with Rod Digga and Tony Shalhoub and and Matthew Lillard. And you know what? I don't give a fuck what anyone says. 13 Ghosts is kind of awesome.
Yeah, like, I've always thought that movie is a lot of fun.
I've always kind of liked it too.
Like, so. I took away all of my bias, all of my nostalgia, all of, you know, what this movie means to me in the circumstances that I'm currently in. 13 Ghosts is fun as fuck. Like, I'm sorry, but I am a total sucker for that, like, mid to late 90s, like, token characters that would say, like, shitty, slightly racist one-liners that then ended up being perfect. Like, where'd the lawyer go? The lawyer split, and then, like, haha, he was cut in half by a glass door. that's funny. That's just hilarious to me. I know that makes me a terrible person, but it's funny. It's super funny to me that that was ever something that people, you know damn well, somebody pitched 13 Ghosts and they're like, do you know what this is missing? A token one-liner. We need to throw that in there. Let's use Rod Digga. Like, that's really funny to me because it's just so blatantly offensive and awful. And it's funny that that ever was okay. But upon rewatching it, I am so shocked that there was never an expansion of 13 Ghosts. Why are there not spinoff movies for all of these characters? Because some of the mythos of these characters are fucking terrifying. The Jackal is legitimately one of the most unsettling looking creatures I've ever seen. Same with the hammer, same with the torso, especially the Angry Princess, which I know is really only prominent because she was topless for most of it, but there's something really unsettling about like a blood red lip and a dark eye on a topless gray woman. But I really think that there should have been more to the 13 Ghost story than there was with just the remake. I think that they kind of shit the bed on that. I did rewatch like all of the special features they have on the DVD of it, which is really interesting because it goes into these mythos like a lot more in depth. And I think that's where my fascination is coming from, because I remember all of my friends and I watching this movie as kids and being like, oh my God, we need to know more about it. And 13 Ghosts was one of the first DVDs that I can remember having such in-depth special features. And I think that's why I like special features so much, is in all honesty, because of 13 Ghosts. I know the movie gets a bad rap. I know a lot of people think that it's shitty, but you know, maybe I'm a terrible person for saying it. I think it's a lot more entertaining than the source material. I think the source material is kind of dull, and I think that's pretty poorly made. 13 Ghosts, the remake, is actually super fun. Well, I'm not trying.
Yeah, at least they have, like, there's like fun gore and stuff in there. You know what I mean? It doesn't shy away from that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
The Ghosts and the Monsters. I mean, there's plenty, even if it's not the greatest film, like, there's enough in there to, as a horror fan,
it's fun. And, like, that's the thing. It's, yeah, it's a fun movie. I think that the jump scares are really effective. Even after all this time, I think the characterizations are really clever. I think that the gore is, it's a really, really good amount. The only thing that I wish they would have done a little bit more with is, you know, this half-assed attempt at like a heart-wrenching story of, you know, the burned woman or whatever the hell her ghost name is supposed to be, Tony, like Monk's wife, whatever she's supposed to be. I think that if they would have taken that a little step further, this would be a movie that we would all treasure as something that's brilliant and wonderful and breathtaking. But they try to like shoehorn this love story thing, but we're no one's really invested into it, so it doesn't really hold any water to any of us. But as far as like these weirdo remakes or these weirdo horror movies that came out in like the late 90s, early 2000s, 13 Ghosts is completely underrated, and I think that more people should watch it, give it a chance, rewatch it. I think that as the years have passed, it's aged pretty well. I think that it's a great timepiece for the films that came out in that that kind of decade. I think that that's it's like the perfect film that captures every trend that was going on at that time.
I have a stack of 90s horror films that I want to get to, and it's on that stack. It's like that, and then of course the, you know, I know you did last summer and all that stuff.
You need to also throw Colobus in there. If it's not there, track that shit down. Colobus is awesome.
What is it?
Brad, have you seen Colobus?
I don't know what you're saying.
Colobus?
Holy fuck. I've seen something that neither of you have seen. This has never happened.
Spell it for me.
K-O-L-O-B-U-S.
Oh, Colobus. Okay, yeah. I thought you were saying, I was hearing something completely different.
I've also drank an entire bottle of wine by myself, so I cannot be held liable for anything that I'm trying to say.
Slurring stuff.
Colobus?
Absolutely.
Oh. Yeah, I've never seen this.
Oh my God, Sean, you need to look this shit up right now. It is so cutting edge and like ahead of its time. It's ridiculous. Like, you'll watch it and be like, oh, this must have came out in 2009. I don't know why I tried to start that with 20, but 2009. And you're like, wait, no, from not then? Fuck. Great. I don't know what year it came out. I want to say like the 90s, 99. But I could be wrong. Thank you. It came out in 99, and it plays like the real world, but better. It's fucking sweet. It's a
Blu-ray. Is it a Blu-ray?
No. Probably not. No. I have it on VHS, and the box is like holographic.
God damn, the DVD's, you can get it on a double feature with a movie called Tail Sting for $10 used. All right. I'll
there
track
you
the
go.
Sucker down.
Fuck yeah. Track it down. It's awesome.
See, right. The reason why I didn't remember the name is because when I was little, I called that Colobos.
Colobos.
I called it Colobos when I found it because I read it like, oh, like Lobo, like wolf. No, that's not close at all. It's very wrong.
Okay.
It's Colobus.
Well, I'm putting it in the show notes too so people can track it down as well.
Yeah, track that shit down. It's awesome.
All right.
But yeah, that's my doorstep. What's up?
Very cool. All right. I'll go ahead and go.
I need you to relax. I just wanted to say, like, I know the 90s get shit on a lot for, you know, terrible movies. But I think in around, like, especially 98, 99, 2000, we had a good portion of, you know, fun horror films. And things that, I don't know, they were just a little different. Because they were trying to emulate what the 80s did, as well as throwing some new age stuff in there. And also appealing to kids. And the cool part about these 98, 99, 2000 horror films is they weren't as scared to make them rated R, which was a thing that we do now. Like, most of the horror films that come out, Blumhouse, all those films, they're all PG-13. You know, we don't get R-rated horror films that much anymore. They're mostly, you know, audience pleasers with all this other shit. So, you know, appealing to everybody. So I think in those, like, 3 years, I mean, everything from 13 Ghosts to Ghost Ship to,
can we please talk about how amazing the opening sequence of Ghost Ship is?
It's the best part of the movie.
It's
incredible.
Like, have you ever seen a movie that blows its load faster?
No, man. That's the problem with that film is that is, like, the best thing that I'd seen in a long time.
Ghost Ship is the cinematic equivalent of a two-pump chump. Like, it starts off so good, and you're like, this is the greatest day of my life. And then, like, that, it's all over with, and you're left sad and upset and wondering what the hell just happened.
Yeah. But, goddamn, great open. I mean, one of the best openings to a horror film, you know, in a long time. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, no, but it's one of those things that I just think that we pass off. But if we really look, you know, on those 3 years, I mean, stuff like, you know, Valentine, Urban Legend.
I love Valentine. I am such an apologist for that movie.
You know, and we had the remake of Psycho, you know.
I'm not an apologist for that movie.
I still know last summer, the Blair Witch Project. I mean,
yes,
we had
yes.
shit ton of films, and I don't know. I really love those years of cinema. Even fucking Jamie Lee Curtis and Virus. Jesus
Anything
Christ!
Anything that had like five heads on the cover with like something in the background, I'm probably down with.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a really great year for movies, and I don't know, maybe I'm a little more partial to it because I was going to the theater with friends and taking them to go see these movies, you know, sneaking in, getting into these movies and watching, you know, these brutal rated R horror films. And, you know, we don't have that anymore, sadly enough.
You're right.
I don't know.
You're
right. It just kind of passed. I mean, we still have great films. Don't get me wrong.
But they're all like independent films that you get on Blu-ray or that you find on Netflix, you find on Vudu. They're not ones that hit the theater.
Yeah. These are hardcore mainstream films. We would never have a movie like Virus, which Jamie Lee, everybody knows what I'm talking about, like the fucking ship that has all like computer robots and shit.
I need to watch that again. I'm a sci-fi nut.
We would never have that movie again in the theater, no matter what cast you had, really. Unless it was like, you know, fucking that dude from Guardians of the Galaxy who was in that TV show. And
Chris
you
Pratt.
Know, yeah. And fucking, you know, I don't know, some popular female and, you know.
Everybody would look squeaky clean like they just came fresh off the CW.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, we don't have that anymore, and I kind of miss that. So I'm always happy to watch a movie from the 90s, you know, late 90s. Early 90s is a different story. I don't know. It's just a really great, great few years, especially growing up at that time. If you didn't grow up during that time, it might be a little bit different because you know, it was a change in cinema. But I think from, you know, a standpoint as, you know, a 15-year-old kid, that was some cool shit. So.
Agreed. I think there's some gems. If you've written off 90s horror, there are some gems in there to be discovered for sure.
The fucking Faculty.
Oh, fuck yeah. Kidding me?
Yeah.
I saw that shit in the theater twice.
Damn, Sean, you hard, bro.
Talk about Idle Hands, motherfucker.
Oh, hell yeah.
Idle Hands too.
Yep. Some good stuff.
I was tweeting earlier about how Disturbing Behavior may have the single greatest soundtrack ever. I know that that's jumping ahead to the later topic that I will not be a part of, which I'm...
We're sorry. Are you there? Hello? Hello?
Man, she just, like, dipped out altogether. She didn't.
I thought she just hung up on us.
Skynet.
There we go.
I didn't hang up on you.
Like, oh, damn.
Skynet.
God damn you, Skynet. All right. Am I ready to go? Can I go?
Go for it.
No, you haven't went yet? Oh, good.
Jesus Christ, Brad. All right. All right. Well, I watched a couple things, but first I gotta say, let everyone know that Wolfman of Mars has a new EP coming out September 16th called Warp Suburbium, and it's awesome. I got to hear a little bit of it today, and you guys make sure you grab that. I think it's one of their best so far. They keep getting better and better as they release stuff. So,
yeah,
and, of course, I'm not biased because they've wrote music for the show, but I mean, believe me, it's good. So make sure you check that out. I'll put a link in the show notes. I watched a couple things finally. It's been hard for me to sit down and watch anything lately, but I finally watched, after having the Blu-ray for, and I think since we started the show, Brad, I finally watched Saturn 3. Is Saturn 3, right? Saturn 3?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Wow.
The idea of Saturn 3 is fantastic. The beginning has some cool little sci-fi crap, and then it just turns into shit. I think that basically, like, Harvey Keitel shows up on the Saturn with this robot in a case, and the only other people on the base are Farrah Fawcett and Kirk Douglas, who are a couple who are fucking for some reason. She's like, what, like 20? And he's like in his 70s at this point, I think. The age gap is pretty disgusting. But,
whoa.
No judgment here on my part. And then, of course, Harvey Keitel, his little robot in a case or whatever, he downloads his brain or something or part of his brain so it can learn fast. And then it, turns into basically a killer robot with a really small head. So I think the main problem with this film is there's only three people. Like, if there was kind of people there for murder fodder, for robot murder fodder, I think it would at least be a little more fun. But it's just these three people, and they try to do this kind of like love triangle-ish tension, you know, with Harvey Keitel. And he talks like a Vulcan, like he has no emotion or anything. And it's
speaking
just,
of, happy 50th anniversary Star Trek. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Team Riker. That's all I got to say. Ladies man to the max.
Oh, my God.
And he mounts his chairs. Have you guys seen that YouTube video of him sitting down? He, like hurdles over the chair to sit down. He never just sits down. He always is kind of mounting it.
You've said mount way too many times.
When I think Riker, I think, you know, he
when
mounts.
I think of Riker, I think of prison.
Okay. Anyway, so Saturn 3, like, I had high hopes kind of for just kind of B-movie sci-fi crap, you know, but this one didn't go the extra mile. It was just kind of got boring. Pretty disappointed. I had a couple laughs at its expense, but I was actually kind of bummed that it's not as cool as Virus, you know. That's for sure.
Nothing as cool as Virus, Sean.
Anyway, next up, I'm not going to spend too much time on that. It looked great, though. Good job, Scream Factory. I finally watched, and I'm probably going to tell me if I'm pronouncing this wrong or not, but Tenebrae?
Tenebrae?
No. You can say
Tenebrae?
Tenebrae.
Yeah, it's okay. Tenebrae.
There you go.
Tenebrae. Got it.
Or you can say Tenebra.
Okay, oh. Tenebrae.
Did you watch that beautiful, beautiful hard shell? What the hell is it called? I'm sorry. I'm
from Synapse. The Steelbook. No, I didn't.
Steelbook.
I had bought Steelbook. I had bought the Arrow Blu-ray for like $15.
So oh well, like, aren't you Mr. Fancy Pants?
So I was like, well, I couldn't justify spending $40.
Oh, I justified the shit out of that Steelbook.
The only thing that would get me to buy that is it has to be a little bit cheaper. But there is a documentary on there about Giallo that I want to see. So one of these days I'll probably grab it. But this is my first time. I wanted to watch it first to make sure I loved it. And
if you think Synapse is ever going to go below 40 on that Steelbook,
I know.
Synapse.
I'm probably going to be stupid and grab the Demon Steelbooks if they're still around.
Dude, Demon's is still $45 a pop. They're not going to come down in price.
Yeah, God damn it, Synapse.
Demon's is so good. See, that's the thing that makes you crazy, is that like they're putting out stuff that's so good, but they will never drop the price. Those Demon Steelbooks have been $45 for like 2 years.
But see, I had the Arrow Steelbook for that, and there's some extras on there. So I got their standalone $14.99 versions for the better picture quality. For Tenebrae, I want that documentary, and they would take that documentary off. It's like, just leave the documentary on and give me the frickin' plastic case, god damn it. Anyway, Tenebrae, fucking fantastic. As you all probably know. But,
yes.
I absolutely adored it, and, you know, my Giallo repertoire is not very deep, and I've been slowly, you know, trying to watch more and more. And I have, because of the show, we've actually watched quite a bit. But this one, like with the music and everything, with the kind of detective story that it's telling, and with like the, goddamn, there's like one scene or a couple scenes where there's just buckets of blood splurting everywhere. Pretty shocking. And it kind of came out of left field, and I loved it. And, there's just some great characters and, I just thought it was great. Great soundtrack. And what I loved about this, and I don't think I've seen it in too many other films, and Brad, let me know if there's other films that do this, but the way they pan the camera, like they'll pan the camera, like the way Argento will like pan the camera, you think maybe you're going to see something, and then it just switches to the scene. Sometimes, though, you do notice something, but he kind of plays with the audience a little bit, because there's one scene where the killer, or somebody's outside, and he's just panning the camera like over the house as it's raining and just over around, you're just watching the rooftops of a house, and then it pans down to, you know, to a window. And of course, maybe there's someone outside the window, but the way he kind of plays with the camera, I thought was really fun. And this is, definitely a film that I want to compare the Synapse version. I was looking up screen caps online, and it looks like they did a better job color correcting it. As far as like clarity, I think this looked just fine. But I think there's probably a prettier colors, I would imagine, in the Synapse, because it seems like they corrected some wonky blues or whatever on it from the Arrow one. But anyway, so yeah, cross that off the big old list of shame. So I was very excited.
How long is your list of shame?
It's long but distinguished.
I feel like I could wrap a gift for every child on Christmas with your list of shame.
My list of shame is ridiculous, and my to watch pile is ridiculous. But you know what? I'm slowly but surely knocking stuff off. So
yeah, if people are not following the Screamcast on Twitter, they are greatly missing out on Sean's giant to watch pile. Your to watch like you could build the Iron Throne.
It's like somebody's
Blu-rays. You have
like,
not
it's like
seen.
The collection somebody's trying to get to. Like I'm trying to get this many movies, you know, and I'm like, I haven't watched all
ridiculous.
Of them. Half of them are still in the plastic. God damn it.
It's so insane.
There's days where I do get depressed, and I do struggle with the depression because of that. But, you know, I may go to therapy. That may help. But
why
it's just
go
time.
To therapy well, when you a, can watch more movies?
It, being a parent with three kids and everything, it's like it's tough to find a time to sit down and watch these. And I'm not staying up late anymore, which is like, God damn it. But slowly but surely, I'm knocking through them all. So, but those are the two movies that I watched, and I wish I could watch more. I did discover, based on through Twitter, I think one of our listeners was listening to this podcast, but it's a podcast with Steve Barton and Joe Netter. It's called Brainwaves Horror and Paranormal Talk Radio. And I think Steve Barton, I know him from Dread Central. And I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, that's Uncle Creepy.
Yeah, Uncle Creepy. And the podcast, like the one that the person was listening to was their episode on the whole flat earth conspiracy or whatever. There's people out there that think that the earth is flat. So I really want to listen to this episode. It's 3 hours and 17 minutes long. But I want to listen to that one. But they, you know, they have interviews with Sid Haig and Doug Bradley and things like that. But it sounds like they're doing a little more than just interviews. They're going into more paranormal type things. And so, if you're looking for a new podcast to add, not to replace us, but to add alongside your enjoyment of podcast, check them out. Pretty good stuff there. And then, as I've been diving into my Dungeons and Dragons stuff, as I'm trying to teach my kids and myself how to play Dungeons and Dragons, I stumbled upon Dan Harmon, the creator of Community, has a TV show on CISO called Harmon Quest, where they basically play Dungeons and Dragons and they animate their quote unquote adventure that's in front of a live audience. Sounds a bit weird, but it's fucking funny. I haven't laughed this hard in a long time. So you're watching people play Dungeons and Dragons, but it's animated. I think by the animators who do like Rick and Morty. So funny stuff there. And then, Dan Harmon's podcast, Harmontown, has been keeping me laughing all week long because I've had a shitty week and they've kept me afloat. So a couple podcast shout outs for everybody. That's all I got. Braddy there. Right there. Hello.
Please stand by.
So that's all the shit that I've been listening to / watching at all. And everyone's quiet. As I was talking, I guess BJ got dropped off the call. And she can't get back in to the Skype call. Skype is a douchebag.
It's not a good person.
God damn it.
Skype is Skype doesn't like us.
Hey Skype. Fuck you, Skype.
And then the call drops.
Hey Skype, eat a big donkey dick. Put your lips around that donkey dick, Skype.
I really right. hope you're not putting that in the show.
Oh, it's in the show. I don't care. I don't care anymore. You've heard of Dan Harmon? No? Yes? No?
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, creative community, like I said, writer, director, and Rick and Morty is the thing now. It's on it's a cartoon on, I think, Adult Swim. Funny shit, but Harmon Quest is on CISO. Check that out. I think you can get CISO free for a month. You can burn through the Harmon Quest series pretty quick. And if you're into Dungeons and Dragons, or even if you're not, my wife's actually been watching it and laughing. Are you dialing? Are you calling someone? Are you dialing a number?
Hello.
Oh, there you are.
That's weird, man. I heard dialing.
Is someone listening to this podcast? See, I pissed off Skype. Sorry.
I told you, man, you should have done that.
Big brother person who may be listening. I will not insult Skype again. All I'm saying is, God damn it, all I'm saying is,
I don't think we're supposed to be plugging Harmon's show.
Check out Harmontown, the podcast. I'm like 11 episodes in, and he has like 211 episodes. He's been doing this since the last presidential election. So the Romney jokes aren't really hitting as hard right now. Because I just went all the way back to the beginning, because this is, I guess, where they started the idea to do the whole Dungeons & Dragons TV show during this podcast. And it's, goddammit, it's funny. Funny stuff. That's all. I'm done. What the hell have you been watching?
Oh, hey, Sean, I've been watching some movies. and they've been really good.
Okay.
So thanks for asking.
Would you like to expand on some of the movies you've been watching?
Yeah, some have been horror, some have been comedy, not everything has been for everybody. How about that? and that's been on my doorstep. No, but all seriousness, I'm such a dick. So I got around to watching, Jaws 3, which, I think I reported last show I watched Jaws 2.
Yep.
Which I was slightly, you know, I went in not thinking I was gonna watch a sequel to Jaws. So that's what I all in all I wasn't that happy with Jaws 2. I enjoyed it for what it was worth. So I went on to Jaws 3. I like Jaws 3.
You like Jaws 3?
Yeah, I like Jaws 3 quite a bit. It was funny because I don't know if I'm not that into Jaws, but I totally thought that baby shark was the Jaws. And I was like, man, it's going to attack people in that little pool.
This is where he becomes basically just a slasher.
And I was like, shit, man, this is going to be insane. This little baby shark's going to get beat people. No, there's a big mama shark out there. Yep. And it got me. I was like, oh, shit.
That's the one where the guy supposedly gets eaten by Jaws or whatever, the shark, and is the camera is like inside as he's inside the shark and it looks awful. Am I thinking the right thing?
No, he gets, it's one of the people that, you know, help out, and he gets eaten underneath when he's trying to, I guess, go up a ladder, and later on he's still like kind of wedged in the shark's mouth. He's dead, but he's like wedged there.
I don't know if they really studied the anatomy of a shark, though. That's the funny thing.
You know, Sean, I enjoyed Jaws 3.
That's awesome. I'm glad you did. Did you watch it in 3D?
No, but it has a cool cast. It has Louis Gossett Jr., Dennis Quaid, Leah Thompson. I mean, what more do you want? It's a fun little horror film. I think we look at the Jaws sequels as, oh man, Steven Spielberg, Jaws 3. And it's not. It's just Jaws. So I enjoyed it.
I actually used to rewatch Jaws the Revenge all the time.
Okay,
and that's the one. And that's the one where the shark roars like a lion.
Hey, I want to hear some roaring because I would probably dig that.
It never bothered me one bit. So, I used to draw cartoons of Jaws the Revenge shark because it has like a burn around its eye, and I would always draw that shark.
Hey man, I dug it.
Mm.
That's all I can say.
That's refreshing to hear.
So I got also around to watching. I rewatched actually. I forgot. I didn't forget. There's a couple movies out there that I truly, truly love. And they just never get a much play. And sometimes I'm apprehensive about telling them on the podcast because I feel that there's a couple people that listen to this show that take the movies that I mention and then write articles about them. I'm not going to say any names, but I know who you are, so I suggest you stop.
We're on to your game, motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's like a day after our show post, you post about the movie that I talked about. Cool. But anyways, I'll mention this one because we actually had an article from Ash Varner on it that made me want to rewatch it because it was one of the films that I did not watch repeatedly like I did Dog Soldiers and The Descent and Centurion. So I rewatched Doomsday.
Yeah.
Again, dude, this movie is so much goddamn fun.
I love it.
I'm glad I took, you know, a few you know, years to rewatch it. But I mean, Rhona Mitra is, she's great. She
smoking
plays
hot.
In another movie. She,
because she's in one of those Underworld movies.
Yeah, dude. And what, it's one of the best Underworld
movies.
It's
the one where it's Rise of the Lycans. Lycans!
Dude, Rise of the Lycans is the shit, man. That's a fun fucking movie.
I'm a fan.
I love Rise of the Lycans. Underworld Awakening, that shit can go to fucking hell. I don't even know how that... So I'm excited for the new Blood Wars movie because I want to see it end well. But yeah, Doomsday is great. Great special effects. Dude, talk about some fucking gore.
Oh, yeah.
Like, dude, people's heads are being, like, splattered all over the place. Like, they don't hold back at all. Really, really fun. And that's pretty much it. Watch Neil Marshall's movies. He's a fantastic director. He hasn't made a bad movie yet.
No, he needs to get back into feature films. He's doing a lot of TV stuff. But, I mean, like, someone replied to me on Twitter that, you know, he's going where the money is. And he's getting paid to do what he does. He's done some Game of Thrones stuff. He's done other, like, if a TV show needs an epic medievals type battle, like, he's been the one to call in. Like, Centurion was kind of his step away from kind of his own thing, because it's obviously kind of a studio, more of a studio movie. But I'd love to see him just get back into some horror flicks, man, because The Descent is probably one of the few, like, modern horror movies where I was literally just tense the whole way through. And not a lot of movies that I've seen in the theater have got me that tense or that kind of just, you know, scared out of my mind. And
like boners?
Boner scared.
I mean, no, fear boners.
Fear boners, yeah.
Like,
totally.
You get pure boners.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I love getting scared where I get boners. That's awesome.
but he has, you know, there's a talent there that he has for these films. And Doomsday is kind of his homage to kind of these post-apocalyptic type.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a total.
And it's great. Like, he's a great genre filmmaker. I even like Centurion, and that one got some shit, but I liked Centurion. I would love to see him do some more feature films. Hopefully he listens to this podcast and he jumps back into feature film because of Ash Varner's amazing article. It's a great article. You guys should read it, by the way.
I'm pretty sure that Neil Marshall listens to this.
I think so. We can get his girlfriend.
Alexa Carolyn or something like that.
Yeah. Let me drop her a line.
Yeah, you do that.
I'll drop her a line, and we'll get Neil to make some feature films.
So actually, let's talk about more important things. Actually, it's not that important, but we will talk about it. I went to the one night only for Rob Zombie's 31. Mm. I am a huge Rob Zombie fan. I grew up with White Zombie. So when he got into his solo stuff, I really dug that. Hellbilly Deluxe is still like one of my favorite, you know, metal albums. So even before then, when I knew he was making House of 1000 Corpses, I remember reading about it, that he's making a movie. So I was super excited. And then it took forever to come out. I remember seeing a trailer in the theater and when I went to go see, I think it was maybe like House of the Dead. I went to go see that, and there was a trailer before that, and I just really, really wanted to see the movie. The girl I was dating at the time, her parents, she was a little Christian, girl.
Whoa, you dated a Christian girl?
Yeah.
Did you suck out her soul?
Yes.
Okay.
Her family fasted for the movie not to come out. So, House of 1000 Corpses
is worked.
A little bit more special. They like fasted like after it was like announced because I kept talking about it, and then they like saw like a trailer or something, and they were like, they hope the movie, all the copies are destroyed. I'm like, do you not understand how movies work? This is not going to happen.
But Brad, God is bigger than all these movies, Brad. God can do anything. He can move mountains from faith of small as a mustard seed.
So I saw House of 1000 Corpses, and I fell in love with that movie, and I still love that movie. I grew up on like films like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Hicksploitation films like Gator Bait and, you know, just really trashy movies. And, you know, trashy people killing, you know, good looking kids. And that's what he does. And then that's why I always kind of, in his defense, I always say, people are like, oh, all his people are white trash in his movies. Well, there's a reason behind that. He's making a specific type of movie.
Yeah.
He's not doing it because he like, no, he's making that old trashy movies. He loves that shit, you know, so that's what he does. And then Devil's Rejects came out. I thought that was even better, but on a totally different level. And then, of course, his remake of Halloween came out, which I enjoy. I look at it as a standalone movie and nothing, and it is Rob Zombie's own take.
It is what it is. Yeah.
My only complaint with Halloween is that we get to know Michael a little too well.
Right.
And that's the problem. He's not scared anymore. Now, I am a fan, quote unquote, fan of Halloween 2. I enjoy Halloween 2. I like what he did with it. I like how crazy it got and how real it was. And it truly felt like a Rob Zombie film rather than a remake of Halloween 2 in a hospital. I think if you look at Halloween 2 as a standalone movie, as a sequel to Rob Zombie's Halloween, you will, because everybody's comparing it to the original. There's no hospital. Well, there is a hospital in it.
It's his dream. Dream hospital. Really happened.
Sean mad at dreams. Sean doesn't like fire.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that, and Lords of Salem was in my top 10 of like 2013.
I think Lords of Salem for me, I mean, for me, it's Devil's Rejects is my, that movie, I mean, you feel like you gotta wash like a friggin', you know, half an inch of grime off you when you get done watching that movie, but it's really well done, really well done. But I think Lords of Salem, I don't know why it's got so much hate, because I absolutely loved it. It was him kind of trying something different, you know, and, I love that flick, man.
Yeah. I dug it, and I truly loved it. So, that all said, I was pretty fucking stoked for Rob Zombie's 31. I didn't mind 31. I gave it a 2.5 out of 5. And I am here to tell you why I gave it a 2.5. Number one, I've always loved Richard Brake. Richard Brake is a very, very intimidating person. He has one of the scariest vibes in the history of cinema. He makes you feel uneasy. Just his presence on screen. When he speaks, it becomes even more frightening. One of my favorite movies that I mention pretty much every fucking show is Asylum Blackout, also known as The Incident. He plays the lead fucking psycho in Asylum Blackout. So when I heard he was basically playing lead Doomhead in 31, I was even more excited. Richard Brake is the best thing about the film. It is worth it just for his performance. And Rob Zombie did one of the coolest and most memorable openings of a movie I've seen in a long, long time. I was like getting chills watching the opening to this film. Richard Brake does his film in black and white, and he has this long fucking monologue, very much almost like the voiceover in Kill Bill with the bride. It's very like Tarantino-ish, and it just talks about killing and what he does for a job and what his mind is like, and it's perfect. And then we kind of get into the story, which has a great opening, great introduction of the characters, shows the camaraderie of the characters, shows the differences of the characters, but they still love one another. It's also, you know, Sherry Moon Zombie, who is a complete beauty. I don't care what people say. I think she is one of the cutest, prettiest women out there. And then you have this two black men by, I want to say, two black men that's in this film as well, which was fantastic to see. You know, mainly because they're older black men. You don't have like fucking, I don't know who's popular, Taye Diggs and Idris Elba, which they're great actors. Don't get, let me take that back. Taye Diggs, I don't know. But Idris Elba's amazing.
Is it Idris?
I don't know.
Idris Elba?
Wow, you just corrected me for a change. That's
holy
crazy.
Shit.
That, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Skype. watching the film unfold with, you know, basically two co-star, you know, black males as leads, and then Meg Foster, who has still got it. I mean, she's been in horror films ever since then, and she's, you know, playing a kind of a badass that carries around a club with some nails on it. You know, and just and a couple other characters that are thrown in there, really funny guy. I can't remember his name, but just a really good group of characters. And 31, after that, and after they get abducted and get thrown into this game, it becomes an homage to Rob Zombie movies, it seems. He repeats the same things that he did in his other movies, which was really bizarre to me. It wasn't a specific style. It was like he was taking little things here and there and putting them back into this movie. It's really edited. It's very odd how it is, edited. Because it's not as crazy and bombastic as you would think. It's pretty tame. It is literally them running one room to another, getting attacked by these clowns that, they unleash. This group of people that's very, very reminiscent to The Purge. And it just kind of slowly falls apart because it doesn't focus on the people anymore, these carnies that are being attacked. Hmm. It kind of focuses on the craziness of these clowns that are chasing them and spends a little too much time with them and wants to be like, then Rob Zombie really churns it out of this, like, just being complete, like, psychos. Like, where they just go on these, like, long stretches of just talking shit. And it's like, okay. You know, like, one of the clowns is like, I'm gonna fuck your mouth hole. I'm gonna fuck your asshole. I'm gonna fuck your pussy hole. I'm gonna fuck your eye hole. And he just keeps going, and it's like, I don't mind when Rob Zombie, like, really, like, gets down and dirty and has, like, corny dialogue like that. But man, it just goes on for, like, too long sometimes. And, you know, it's just, it was just a little upsetting because I was expecting more. This feels like if Rob Zombie did a movie before House of Thousand Corpses. This feels like his freshman attempt.
Huh.
And then House of Thousand Corpses is his second film, and then so on. Because he's an accomplished filmmaker. He really is. And I know people disagree with that because I think they expect more out of Rob Zombie, and he's just giving us horror fans what we really want, like the hardcore horror fans. Not saying you're not a horror fan if you don't like Rob Zombie by any means. You know, you might not just like his movies, and that's completely fine too. So I'm not attacking anybody. Don't attack me, you sons of bitches. But he's making horror films that pertain to a certain audience. And I enjoy those films. But that said, one of the most disappointing things I've ever seen is I stayed after the film where Rob Zombie had a Q&A that played in the theater. That's why everybody saw this. And long story short, he was talking because everybody knew that he was trying to get out of the horror genre, and he was trying to do a hockey movie called The Broad Street Bullies. And I really wanted to see Rob Zombie get out of the horror side and make a hockey movie. I think that'd be really cool. So he's been working on this film for a few years, and you know, he's got a bunch of projects he was attached to, like The Crow, the remake of The Blob, all this stuff. It never happened. So he said out of frustration, he was on a phone call with some producers, and he said, I could think of the dumbest thing right now, and I'm going to say it. A bunch of people are kidnapped by clowns, and they have 24 hours to survive. And the studio actually bought it. And
but wasn't this a Kickstarter?
Yeah, well, no, he did crowdfunding, but I mean, the studio's but that's only gonna,
Yeah, okay.
I also think he was promised distribution,
right?
At the time,
and get this amount of money, you know, like in most people who produce a film have to pony up the money anyway to get the film made. So that's probably some deal. Get this amount of cash, we'll distribute the film.
Yeah. So, you know, it just seemed like he really didn't want to do it. That's what it felt like, the vibes I was getting. And I've seen a lot of interviews with Rob Zombie because I've been a big fan. But it just seems like he was just kind of bored. And it kind of does that on screen. Like, it seems that he had a lot of cool ideas for other movies and was, like, taking them and slowly putting them in this movie. So all in all, I give it a 2.5 out of 5. I'm going to watch it again because, people say the Sundance cut was a little different.
Yeah, there's apparently going to be, an unrated cut.
Well, Rob Zombie in the interview says that there's only 2 scenes that are missing.
Huh, okay.
However, I've heard from a few people that saw it at Sundance say that's not true. There's some extensions of scenes and it's just really well put together, like better. It's just, it's put together a little bit better than what we saw that night. So I'm hoping, because this thing gets released very shortly, it'll be on VOD, I think, in just probably a few days after this episode airs, because I think it's opening like September 15th on okay. VOD. And then it opens like in limited theaters. In your hometown. Well, if you're lucky. So all in all, I was a little disappointed. I did walk out thinking it was a bummer. But I did enjoy myself for the most part. I'm glad I saw it. And I really, really hope people get to see the fear and the basically just the vibes that Richard Brake can give those audience members. Because you heard people in the theater like, ugh. You know, like, Richard Brake's not a pleasant guy. And if you haven't seen his movies, I suggest picking up anything. Even Doom with The Rock. He plays a character, I think his name's Goat. And he's just a fucked up individual. You know, and he's just a great actor. And I really hope that he gets more play. So, but that's pretty much what's on my doorstep.
Cool, man. Very cool. We will be talking horror soundtracks, with the exception of one. There's one Western in there from Mondo in just a little bit. But first, we need to check in with Josh Obishaw and see what's up with the news. Josh, what's up, man?
Good evening. Happy to be back.
Yes. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Well, it's going to be a light news week. Not a whole lot going on, but still some exciting stuff nonetheless. First thing I want to get into is our sponsor Vinegar Syndrome, excuse me. They just announced one of the titles in their October package, and I don't want to say it's Hobgoblins, but it's Hobgoblins. The 1988 Gremlins-inspired, I'm using air quotes right now. That's pretty much all the details that we have with that. It was, I don't know if this was accidentally linked or whatnot. The listing on Blu-ray.com just sort of appeared and we just went from there. But yeah, that's one of the titles Vinegar Syndrome is putting out in time for Halloween.
I think Diabolik did something where they showed off all the new ones, and I'm trying to find it. I can't find it now. But let me see. I'm looking at their pre-orders here. Let me see if I can find it real quick. It was Hobgoblins. Yeah, I can't find it. I can't find it. Somebody found it and they released something showing all the stuff that, that they're going to be releasing on Facebook, along with, Hobgoblins. Let's see here.
I see.
We've talked about Hellbent, right? Last week?
Yeah.
So Hobgoblins, did we talk about, Horror House on Highway 5?
Oh yeah, that's all the September package.
Yeah. Damn it. Yeah, they got some other ones here, but they're like, with their stuff, it's all, did we talk about Murder Weapon and Deadly Embrace? That's the Lania Quigley ones. We talked about that.
Yeah, we talked about the,
okay.
Yeah.
So I think we were ahead of the game here. Let's see. Yeah, I think we, Nightmare Sisters, did we talk about that? Yep.
Yes, we did.
Yep. Okay. All right. So there we go, everyone. We had the scoop. We had the scoop.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's all good. I mean, that was all the information that we had on that particular title. But as soon as there's an official announcement, we'll let you know what's going to be on the Hobgoblins disc, which is going to be interesting what they find and what they call together to put on this Blu-ray.
Let me see if the Diabolic listing has anything. Hold on.
Okay.
Let's see here. All right, here we go. It's restored, preserved in 2K from 35mm original negative. Archival commentary track with director Rick Sloan. Hobgoblins Revisited, a brand new making of featurette. And then a new interview with the creature fabricator Kenneth Hall. And then there's another Hobgoblins, the making of a disaster piece featurette. And then Hobgoblins invade Comic-Con. And a reversible cover artwork. So there you go.
That's pretty sweet.
I don't know if they put it up on their site. I think they just allowed Diabolic to kind of have the scoop and just chuck them up here.
Wow. I didn't even think to look at Diabolic. I mean, I just usually wait until, you know, Vinegar Syndrome says, here's what we got.
Yeah, normally we get
didn't
like
even think about that.
Yeah.
Right.
It looks like the Linnea Quigley ones, they're going to have commentary tracks with Linnea Quigley and the director. So some good stuff there.
As you should.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Totally.
Go forth.
Nick. Oh, yes. We've got the final list of extras for that two-disc collector's edition of Child's Play. All of the archival bonus features that have been on previous editions are going to be on it. So the new stuff includes a 2K scan from the Inner Positive, a brand new audio commentary with director Tom Holland, and a couple of good little goodies here. We've got behind-the-scenes special effects footage from Howard Berger, a total of 60 minutes worth of that. Howard Berger, your special effects friend till the end, which is an interview with Berger, and that's about 40 minutes. And Life Behind the Mask, Being Chucky. This is an interview with actor Ed Gale, who a lot of people may know also played Howard the Duck. That's going to be 40 minutes. So those are your new bonus features for Child's Play, the collector's edition. Now, breaking from home video at the moment, I got some good news and I got some bad news for all you Godzilla fans. That new Toho Godzilla movie, the first new one in 12 years, Shin Godzilla or Godzilla Resurgence, is coming to U.S. theaters. Bad news is it's only going to be here for a week. It's only going to be playing from October 11th to October 18th. So if you want to catch a Toho Godzilla movie on the big screen, that's your chance. October 11th through the 18th, and go to thescreamcast.com. We've got a link there where you can purchase tickets.
Very cool.
Going back to home video, if you go to thescreamcast.com, you can also find a gallery I put up of the front key art for a bunch of Code Red titles that are going to be coming out soon. But what I really want to tell you about is they've got The Church, the 1987 Michel Salvi movie, The Church, which is often mistaken for a demon sequel. not a whole lot of information on that as of yet, except that they just did an interview with Giovanni Lombardo Radici, who people know from Cannibal Ferox. But as far as release date or any other bonus features, we don't have that yet, but we'll let you know. So Code Red's got Opera and now The Church.
Wow, those two are must-buys.
For like, sure.
And they'll be solid. Like, all their stuff has always been solid. Like, they've been hard to get a hold of sometimes, and dealing with Bill can be a pain in the ass sometimes, but, you know, all the Code Red stuff has always been, like, a legit release, you know? So, except when he kind of sneaks the Banana Man on the cover some places. It's like, dude, really? But
I don't get that. Well, whatevs. And last but not least for you guys this week, John Squires is actually reporting that we're getting an extended cut of the Evil Dead remake. Fede Alvarez says that it was going to be coming, quote, just in time for Halloween, which is next month. So, surprise. We don't have any details on when exactly is the release date for that or what's on it. It hasn't been like an official like announcement from, I guess it's Sony that's put out the remake on home video. I believe it is. But yeah, but we should be getting, I guess we're getting an extended cut of that movie pretty soon.
Huh.
Which I understand a lot of people have been clamoring for that. Which is fine. I mean, I like the Evil Dead remake. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it right now because I felt like there was some confusion. Did you see the Blumhouse article?
No, actually. I didn't know. I was actually looking at Blumhouse earlier and I couldn't even find it.
Let's see here. Bullshit.
Let me just close this down and see if I can find it.
Yes, there's a longer version, but it's not a director's cut.
No, it's just an extended cut. It's
okay.
Yeah.
It looks like the extended version accidentally got sent to the UK. They were airing the extended version on cable in the UK.
Oh, nice.
But he says the director's cut is what went to theaters and what's on Blu-ray now, but there will be an extended cut that helps flesh out some of the characters. So, Which is fine. I mean, sometimes extended cuts work. Sometimes they don't. But sometimes I like owning both cuts, you know, and I can make my own decision. Sometimes I'm in the mood, you know, I'd be in the mood for an extended cut. Sometimes not. But it sounds like he's happy with the director's cut, but the extended cut is what he kind of seems to be like they had whittled down and were almost happy, but he went in for some pacing issues and made his theatrical. But I mean, the theatrical is just fine with me, but it'll be fun, you know, to compare and watch next time.
Agreed.
Cool.
It is. Yeah, like I said, light news week, so that's all the time I have for you fine peoples out there.
All right, Josh. Thanks a lot, man. And again, thanks for all you do on the site. We really, really appreciate it, man. You've really, helped kick things into gear as far as the site goes, so.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
All right. We'll talk to you next week, man.
See you guys next week.
All right. Let's jump into our conversation about soundtracks.
Cool.
So,
they're
sorry.
Pretty good. I like it.
No. Sorry, I couldn't think of a witty segue here. But basically, you got your hands on a handful of vinyl records released, was it released through Mondo?
Yeah, Mondo Death Waltz.
Okay, yeah, so Mondo Death Waltz.
Yeah, that's who put these together. I mean, mostly, I mean, we could just say Mondo, I guess, for, you know, just to clarify.
So, I mean, I'm a huge fan of horror movies on vinyl, or soundtracks. I have, let me open up my cabinet. Hold on. It was trying to see who released this. But Waxwork Records has been releasing a whole bunch. I have the Friday the 13th soundtrack, which is pretty it's a prized possession of mine, and they've done some good work. So it seems like the past couple of years, you know, other companies have been jumping on this. I have Mondo's Pet Sematary soundtrack, which I got from Brian Knowles. actually. Friend of the show. And then there's a record company called, who did I get this from? AMS Records put out the Phenomena soundtrack that I found on vinyl, which is pretty fucking awesome. So Mondo did a handful of recent LPs. The soundtracks, The Big Gun Down, Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, Maniac Cop 2, The Beyond, Cat in the Brain, The Bloodstained Shadow, and Absurd. So what we're going to do is talk about these soundtracks. And yeah, I was able to listen.
All soundtracks.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, what do you think about soundtracks? I mean, I'm a fan. I collect them, but what's, you know, what's your stance on them? What do you
I mean, it all depends. I mean, I think there are some soundtracks that don't warrant like a standalone release because maybe because a soundtrack to me, you're supposed to feel maybe what you felt in the film. Like we say soundtrack, let's say scores. Because
one of the greatest soundtracks of all time is the soundtrack to Top Gun.
Okay.
But we'll talk about scores. That's different stuff.
We'll move on. Because that's how I know that I think Mondo calls them soundtracks, and that's fine because they are soundtracks for the most part.
It's original motion picture picture soundtrack, I guess.
Yeah. And then, you know, we have soundtracks that take, you know, basically, like they released on vinyl, they released A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. It is a great soundtrack, you know, great songs picked for that film. The stuff that we're talking about is more or less, you know, scores that are done for the films by, you know, composers. You know, Mondo has done some great stuff. I mean, they have a great Aliens LP that they released, a phenomenal cover. You know, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. They did all the Back to the Future you know, movies on LP. They do a lot of small things too. Like recently they did, you know, Mondo Macabro released The Devil's Business on Blu-ray. Well, they did a soundtrack for that. They did Mickey Keating's Darling on vinyl. The Duke of Burgundy, his name's Peter somebody, did the, Duke of Burgundy. He did Barbarian Sound Studio, the Giallo film, which actually Duke of Burgundy was scored. I don't know if it was scored or they just used songs, but from a band called Cat's Eyes, who is also a side project for a band called The Horrors. That's really great. They pick up things every once in a while. They also release, bands, like they have Umberto that they have on their label. They release his vinyl. You know, they did the soundtrack to The Invitation. They did a, you know, Halloween one. They did Jurassic World. So they're all over the place. I think they just did that one cartoon that come out with the samurais, whatever that's called. It just came out. Like Kubo something.
Oh, Kubo and the Six Strings?
Yeah, they're doing a, you know, an LP of that. They did an LP of pieces. So, you know, Mondo's been around for a while, and they do some great work. Their vinyl looks downright just fucking amazing itself, because everything, if it's not the art on the outside, the art on the actual vinyl is just kind of breathtaking. It really is. It's breathtaking. I know people are like, breathtaking for a record. Yeah, but I mean, you look at these things and you hold them and you're holding like, you know, the 180 of the, you know, the vinyl, and it's fucking heavy and it feels good in your hand.
Oh yeah.
That's pretty fucking cool. You know, it feels like this shit isn't going to break. I've always had my eye on them. I've slowly started buying vinyl again. I went through a little phase, I think I mentioned on the show, you know, a couple times. I'm getting back into the swing of things, and I thought what would be a better way to actually kind of dig into a bunch of horror soundtracks, especially stuff that's not really, you know, talked about all that much. Because, I mean, we could talk about the score to Back to the Future and Star Wars. We all know those sounds. We all know that music. But there's certain scores in certain films that have some odd choices. And I think with the batch that we have, we kind of have a barrage of different shit. Especially that the films that these things come from. So I don't know if you want to start off, Sean, with anything that you like, your favorite of this group that we're talking about, or you know, your experiences with this.
Yeah, I mean, out of the batch here, I mean, I was trying to think of like which movies have I seen, because I really don't like listening to a score if I haven't seen the film. So that's kind of how I went by actually sitting down and listening to these. The Big Gun Down is one of those films I know that I've seen in the past at some point, but I think I was a kid because my grandpa used to be really into John Wayne movies and Italian and spaghetti westerns. So I know that I've seen The Big Gun Down as a kid at some point or some part of it. So that one, I was the first one that I listened to, Ennio Morricone. I mean, everyone knows, you know, he's one of the heavyweights when it comes to spaghetti western soundtracks. And it's what struck me about all these, especially the ones that I listened to, was unlike a lot of kind of modern scores, like each one of these composers brought their own, they bring their own kind of language to each of these scores. Like, you know you're listening to a Morricone score. Like, without a doubt, you know you're listening to that.
Well, I agree with you, but this soundtrack's a little odd.
Well, he incorporates a lot more, I would agree with you there. Yeah, I mean,
With his soundtracks, he does a lot of vocal stuff in the background, and then he kind of has like these daunting sounds that he has, especially like with something with The Hateful Eight, where, you know, it totally sounds like, you know, a horror film soundtrack rather than a western. The Big Gun Down sounds, I don't know, it fits when you watch the movie, but it doesn't fit when you listen to the soundtrack by itself.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
it's not. I don't know if it's like super recognizable. But while watching the film and then watching all this unfold, it's a completely different feel. But Ennio Morricone, he has a couple soundtracks where I listen to it, and I agree with you on certain things you can identify him with, but with something like The Big Gun Down, I don't know if you would have put that first like few tracks on for me. I don't know if I would have got it. And I've been listening to him for years.
Yeah, no, this one is a little more varied because I know that there's his the theme song, and then there's two versions. There's the Italian version, and then there's I guess it would be the English version, I guess, but I mean, there's certain things where, yeah, it feels very Morricone, but then there's other things that I think trying to fit in with the film, I don't know, like this one seems more varied from the soundtracks that I've heard, you know what I mean? There's a lot more.
Yeah, well, there's a shit ton on this soundtrack. I mean, this is a double LP.
Yeah, about like 24 songs or something like that.
Yeah, we have 45 songs total.
45? Oh, shit.
Yeah. And, you know, he has, you know, like on the opening track, Run Man Run, he has, you know, like, you know, it's a female with a weird, I don't know, it's like I said, sometimes it works. Like, let's take his soundtrack for Navajo Joe, which is, you know, let's take a popular soundtrack that people would know, or a song. So Navajo Joe, you really have to see it to know this song. He took a song, it's called Silhouette of Doom. And he took Silhouette of Doom, or Quentin Tarantino took Silhouette of Doom and put it in Kill Bill. Silhouette of Doom is the song that plays when Ellie Driver and the bride have a standoff in Michael Madsen's shack. And, you know, it's just that dun-dun, dun-dun, and then you just hear, like, this person screaming in the background, like, uncontrollably. And not that they're screaming in, you know, the track of, like, I think it's Run Man Run is the opening song, but there's, I don't know, you hear that screaming and you're like, what? Like, you don't expect it, because it's not very normal for, you know, a lot of Western soundtracks to do that, which the Ennio Morricone, if you're talking about his films, then you do hear it, but a lot of them you don't. And I think listening to this by itself, it is a little odd. I don't think you can really even piece that it might be a Western at times. I'm just talking about the opening of the soundtrack.
Yeah, well, he doesn't. This one for sure, like, he doesn't do the old standby where it's like very orchestral, and then he has that bang bang bang, like the guitar, the lead guitar, kind of, you know, going along. It definitely differs from that, and that had been his kind of calling card, I think. You know, with all his other films that he scored. You know, like the good, the bad, and the ugly is kind of the quintessential, you know, Morricone score that everyone knows. Navajo Joe probably would be a close second, because that when you hear that and you're like, oh my God, that's Morricone. 'Cause it's very similar to that kind of open, epic, sprawling Western feel, especially for that time. But yeah, it sounds like there's more kind of experimentation going on with him and the Big Gun Down.
But I like that, though, because, yeah. I mean, I like that you can tell an artist by their songs, but also I like to see people branch out from their norm.
But that's what I feel like. I feel like these composers, they feel like actual artists. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the whole, like Hans Zimmer used to be a really good composer, and he's still, like, but now he has, like, a team, and it's all the same kind of sounding stuff. Like, you know, the Pirates of the Caribbean, Transformers, like all
it's
those,
a
like,
lot of strings.
They're decent scores, and you can maybe tell it's Hans Zimmer, but it's not. He's not really stretching himself. It's doing it's, the Hans it's Zimmer
standard.
Thing.
It's a standard. Like he hits that standard very much like Alan Silvestri. He has always a military drums that's playing. You know, he did Commando. He did, you know, Predator. He did a couple of the Captain America movies. They're very like, you know, do 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 do, and it's just like, I like that. I like the soundtrack to Commando, and I like the soundtrack to, you know, Predator. But I can only like, you know, I like to hear that music in that movie. I don't like to fucking drive to it or something.
Is it? Has there been any movies that you've? I mean, there's a few movies that I absolutely adore the scores to them, and I mean Terminator 2, I bought that score immediately after I saw the movie. Braveheart Braveheart has a fantastic score, I think, by James Horner. And then there's the movie Glory, I think it's James Horner as well, has a fantastic
soundtrack.
You like the bigger stuff. I do, but it's a fine line to be like, oh my God, I'm going to buy that soundtrack. Like when I saw those movies, immediately I was like, I need to own that soundtrack because the music's great. Schindler's List is another one, like a beautiful soundtrack by John Williams, and something different, very different from what John Williams had done before, but just beautiful music. So, but yeah, but John Williams, great composer, but I'm not going to buy every one of his soundtracks. He always gets the job done. But there's certain movies that come along every now and then where the score just kind of sets that movie to the next level, I guess, in my mind and my memory. And it's always like the composer, I feel like it's something a little bit different. It's not the same old kind of orchestral score that we're used to. Like, the movie Glory just had some very amazing themes running through it musically. And Braveheart just had all the great kind of Scottish, you know, bagpipes and all that kind of stuff. And it's a wonderful score.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. No,
so,
I
like,
agree with that.
There's things that said, like, I hear that score and I'm like, wow, that's a great movie, but I also really love the score. So that happens every now and then. And what Mondo seems to be doing, like, they're picking and choosing here, like, them and I guess Death Waltz Records, albums and things that maybe do stand above the others. Cause the Big Gun Down, I guess, yeah, you can say it's not a quintessential or typical Morricone score. It sets it apart. I haven't seen Big Gun Down in a long time. So before I really would dive into the soundtrack again, I want to see it in context first. So for me, it was a little bit jarring kind of listening to the soundtrack. But, the next one that kind of.
I wasn't done.
We're still talking. All right.
Well, no, I was just going to say, just to kind of piggyback off of you, I think it would be, you know, kind of a compliment to Morricone, who has scored countless Westerns. He has to do something different at this point. You know, I mean, you can't literally do the same thing over and over and over. And that's the cool thing about him, is that a lot of his movies, the scores do not sound the same. They are very, very different. Even some of his giallo scores, they are completely different from what you would expect or what you've heard in others. So he does have an ear, and he's, you know, really, really good at what he does. So, you know, even though this is different and might be a little jarring at times, that's probably what's better, because it's more memorable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man. I really want to see it again. I think I bought the Blu-ray, and I need to gather. I have like a shit ton of Westerns that I've been wanting to watch, so I need to do some sort of like Western
month.
Something, yeah.
There's a lot.
I got some good ones too. I need to watch them. The next one that I really had a ton of fun listening to was the Maniac Cop 2 soundtrack. This thing has the kind of Sylvester-y, like you were saying, like the you know, military things. What I loved about this is, again, this is a slasher film, but the movie the soundtrack by Jay Chataway, it sounds like a TV police procedural type, more police type soundtrack. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like.
I'm going to disagree.
Really?
Yeah.
There's certain things where it sounds like a horror soundtrack, but it sounds like, or maybe military. I don't know, but there's just something off where it didn't really come across as a complete horror score to me. I had fun listening to it.
I might be able to fill in the gaps that you just.
Okay. But we got to mention the rap song.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the soundtrack, because the rap song is obviously a kind of a funny part of this whole thing. So, you know, you're saying that there is kind of, you know, some cop, you know, cop stuff in there, like, you know, as far as like hunting people down and stuff like that. But all right, let's take our character, Cordell. Okay. Who is the maniac cop. In this film, Cordell is, let's just spoiler free. Okay. Cause I mean, spoilers, you should see Maniac Cop by now. So in Maniac Cop, we have something a little bit different because we have this killer that is killing people hardcore. He's a maniac. He's a cop. However, when we find out a little bit more about Cordell, he was kind of fucked over. You know, Cordell really isn't that bad of a person. He was a good cop who got tied up in kind of the wrong, with the wrong people. They didn't like him and they, you know, did away with him. And he is kind of an innocent soul in a way, even though he does like batter these people and cut them up. So with the soundtrack, I feel that it plays to some type of like nursery rhyme stuff because he is very childlike, you know, like a big monster, but a baby inside because he is so innocent, but he's so like disfigured and so monstrous on the outside. He kind of has like in the soundtrack, there is this kind of like nursery rhyme sound that plays, like, you know, the ting ting, you know, the tings that happen back and forth. Are you playing it?
Yeah, I was trying to find it up on it's on iTunes, everybody.
So but he has like this sound, you know, Chataway put, even in the first and second, you know, in the second film, he has this sound that's playing in these movies, you know, or in these soundtracks that make you kind of feel sorry for him. Like you're watching like a kid, like a young, innocent person going through that. That's how I feel with the soundtrack. So I don't feel that it's fully like cop blown out.
No. I think what I mean, like the cop, like, cause it uses a lot of horns. You know, like, that reminds me of like this, like the 80s police type movies and TV shows that I watched.
I totally agree with that part. But there are times when it's not doing like the really hardcore stuff.
Yeah.
And it's doing a lot of the light stuff. Like the main theme song, let's just take the theme song for Maniac Cop. That is what I'm talking about. Not like, you know, him going streets and popping up and doing jump scares.
Yeah.
There's a certain, you know, sound that plays like when he's, you know, there's even at times where he's like sitting on the edge of his bed with his hat. Like there's just something wrong, you know, there. And I think the soundtrack, you know, plays off of that, plays off of his feelings almost to the point where it's kind of foreshadowing in a way, because why is this music so like, because I know you have like the really hardcore stuff, but sometimes when you have him, you kind of have like not even like a Michael Myers sounding thing. You just have this very, very like, you know, nursery rhyme, you know, wind up. What do you call those? Like, what do you call those? Like Jack in the Box, or like, you know, like a carousel, or like something like a little kid's bank, or something like that. That's what it feels like. And that's why I dig it so much, because I find that, you know, a little, you know, offsetting and kind of scary. And then we have the Maniac Cop rap.
Yo, wait a minute. What's that?
Something sneaking around the corner.
Here we come. Hold on. You better watch out when you hear that sound. It means that the maniac cop's around. Once upon a time, he was a super cop, but the bad guys burned him to make him stop. They put him in prison, but they tried to kill him.
but he broke out now, he's the villain. Bullets won't hurt him, I know it sounds like Johnny, but when I shoot him, he's dead or alive.
Set him on fire, I shoot him with a Uzi, but he'll show up in your jacuzzi. You can run him over, you can feed him poison, push him out a window and it only annoys him. You better believe me if they think I'm lying. When he show up,
yeah,
people start dying. He's out for vengeance and he can't be stopped. That's why they call him the Maniac Cop.
You have the right.
The music was by Jay Chataway and Peter Levin. But it was
all right. So Maniac Cop performed by Yeshua.
Yeah, Yeshua
Barnes and Brian B. Dub Woods.
Yeah.
So,
oh my gosh, it's fantastic stuff right here.
Hey, that's the shit right there, man. So listen to Maniac Cop rap. There are some, you know, horror films out there that did kind of the rap song at the end of the movies, and this is one of them.
It's fantastic. I think there's a video on YouTube, I think, splicing in, you know, I don't know if it's a full-on video with them actually performing.
Oh, it's probably just a splice together. I don't imagine them doing a video for this movie.
Oh my god, it'd be great if it did.
But yeah, I think it's really well done and really creepy. So, I've always been a big fan of the Maniac Cop series. Not so much maybe the third one, but, definitely. Yeah,
it's just scenes from the movie.
Oh, okay.
I just checked it out. I couldn't hear what you're saying because Maniac Cop rap was playing in my headphones. I apologize.
No, it's okay. I wasn't saying anything important. So. What was next on your
The next two, the next two kind of go together because we can talk about Fabio Frizzi. Fabio Frizzi.
So Cat in the Brain,
and then The Beyond, and I love The Beyond soundtrack. It's one of my favorite soundtracks. I love the themes that they use. There's kind of a foreboding, you know, kind of pulsing foreboding, you know, a tune, and then when shit starts to go down, that main theme that plays. It's just been etched into my brain ever since I first saw The Beyond. But
yeah, and that opening track, man.
Yeah.
There is, I don't know, there's something about that opening track that's, it really is eerie and creepy and kind of totally sets the mood. And I'll tell you one thing is listening to it on vinyl gives like, definitely like, there are certain like soundtracks and certain songs where you like listen to it and you're like, ah, you know, that's okay on vinyl. And there's other stuff that you listen to, it's like, holy shit, like this fucking works. Like this works 10 times better than it does like on a CD or, you know, listening to it in your car.
Because if you bought The Beyond on Blu-ray from Grindhouse Releasing, they included, and Cat in the Brain, they included the soundtrack on CD. But the Beyond, like the picture they use for the cover is just fantastic. It's one of my favorite scene, like favorite images from the scene or from the film. And the one with the woman and the dog, the German Shepherd.
Yeah.
And the,
no, it's beautiful.
I love that image, and them using that as the cover is just fantastic. But I mean, Fabio Frizzi, like I really love like what he does, and he's another artist like. You know, you hear his stuff and you kind of know, you know, that is him. Because even A Cat in the Brain. Very much of a different vibe than The Beyond. A little less horror sounding. He's blending a lot more. Elements like there's some jazz in there and
definitely has different his soundtracks all over the place.
And he even uses that tune from in the Hall of the Mountain King You know, it's using everything. Yeah, I was actually humming it today.
Yeah, Edward Grieg or something is the Hall of Mountain King. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's from 1876.
Yeah, no, it's epic. I mean, it plays in a lot of trailers.
I was trying to queue it up on my phone, but I'll queue it up as we're talking here in post.
Needful Things trailer, I think it plays.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I was walking back to my desk today at work, and I was whistling it, and somebody was like, "Oh, that's scary. What are you whistling that crazy thing for?" And I was like, "What?" I go, "It's like a classic, you know, it's like a classic tune." And apparently the person that recognized it from some horror movie or something, and that's what they, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, I mean.
It's using everything.
Yeah, like Moonlight Sonata was another thing that plays in a lot of a lot of horror films and stuff like that. So, but with The Beyond, like, it just sets an eerie tone and just a really great start for a film, and especially with this vinyl of The Beyond. I mean, it's got the Mondo cover has a great. It has has a tribute to the ending of the film with the two leads. It has kind of the hunting one with the boats, and it has it's just got a really beautiful cover. The vinyl itself, of course, is heavy as shit, but it's fucking like it's two tone colors with two different green, like a lime green and a hardcore green, like maybe even a hunter green. And then it looks like just someone shot like an orange paintball right in the middle, and it splattered all over everything. And it's just, I don't know, man. It looks beautiful when it spins. It matches kind of the front cover. The only thing it doesn't have is a bunch of fucking tarantulas, So, another really great job. And, they really know how to pick these soundtracks. I mean, I think they know what works. I mean, even, like, if you would have said, as me, like, "Hey, man, do you want to take the time to put Maniac Cop 2 on vinyl?" I probably would have said, "Nah."
But that's what I thought, too, man, until I actually sat down and listened to it. And I was like, "Oh, man, this is kind of badass."
Yeah, you listen to it by itself, and it's like, "Oh, shit, this is actually really good by itself."
It's a really good score.
So I like that we have people that, give things a chance like this, because even, like, a hardcore horror fan like myself, I don't know why I would I would probably say no. I think we need to go after some Carpenter soundtracks or something like that. But these work as well. They can't be dismissed just because they might not be Carpenter, Frizzy, or Marcone. Like, there's still some really great artists out there that make. I mean, I know we're talking about Frizzy right now, but. As far as people picking soundtracks, I think that's where it's at, man.
Yeah.
Especially some of these like little ones like this.
Yep. So the Frizzy stuff is good. Like it was fun to kind of transition from The Beyond into A Cat in the Brain.
Completely different.
Yeah, and a very different. You can still tell it's Frizzy, but I mean, A Cat in the Brain is such a different film than The Beyond. And I was listening to it, it's A Cat in the Brain. I was taking my daughter to ballet and I had it playing in the car, and I was like, I go, "Do you think this is like, what kind of movie do you think that this is?" And she's like, "Oh, I don't know." I was like, "Do you think it'd be like a scary movie?" She's like, "No," because it doesn't sound like
it sounds very like Maniac Cop. It sounds a little kiddish.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're on a merry-go-round.
It's very light, yeah. But I mean, A Cat in the Brain is a very interesting film because it's this whole meta thing with Fulci.
Yeah, when you look at it, it does seem very, like, it sounds like it's from the 70s or 80s, but yeah. A Cat in the Brain was made in, like, 1990.
So was it made in 90? Wasn't really? Wow. Oh. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Pretty sure Cat in the Brain was, like, in the 90s. I mean, wasn't it might have been... made in the 80s, but that thing was released in the 90s, to my knowledge.
Wasn't Fabio Frizzi like, was he a part of these were these like kind of like these progressive rock type bands? I mean, he was with he did stuff with Goblin, right? Or am I getting everything? Am I getting the streams crossed?
I
know he did stuff with Zombie too.
I do not recall if he was actually like a member of Goblin.
It seems like they're all or doing the same thing, like the same kind of thing. Like they're all doing these. They're all like. I don't feel like they were composers like, per se. Like this guy was a, you know, a progressive rock, you know, type.
Well, I mean, Goblin was a progressive rock band as well.
Yeah, but that's what I get from Frizzy, but I guess he's not. I mean, he wasn't, but I mean, it feels like he can just go in and join up with Goblin and do some shit. You know, that's when you hear his stuff, you kind of, but, did Goblin do the stuff in Zombie 2 as well?
No, they did
Dawn of the Dead.
You're talking about Zombie, like Fulci Zombie.
Yeah. Okay, they did stuff for the Italian version of Dawn of the Dead. Goblin.
Yes.
Okay, it's all coming back to me, people. Just bear with me as I try to match everything.
Put the puzzle together. You're doing a great job.
Yeah. But I mean, but you know, if someone said Frizzy was a part of Goblin, I wouldn't have batted an eye. I would have believed you. You know, because they feel like they're cut from the same cloth. You can tell these guys.
And they do. I mean, they're around at the same time. I don't think there was a big competition with these guys. No. They all, you know, dug each other's work and, you know, wanted to see everybody succeed that was, you know, doing music at the time. I mean, I would hope that they weren't like, you know, villains and hated each other. But I think they played off of one another. They heard, you know, each other's work and, you know, dug it and went from there.
Yeah. So these other ones, are films that I haven't seen, yet, that they're all on my to watch list for sure. Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, The Bloodstained Shadow, and Absurd. And, so, I mean, I was surprised to see that they released the soundtrack to Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers on vinyl. I mean, the cover is great.
Yeah. And it's another beautiful, it's another like beautiful, like, it's just pink and white.
It's great.
And just kind of sleazy looking.
Yeah, it's fantastic artwork.
Now on this soundtrack, I will say this is a little bit more on the odd side, mainly because of the film. I mean, we're talking about a Fred Olin Ray movie now, which everybody probably, unless you listen to the show, you know how I feel about Fred Olin Ray.
But Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers is his most kind of, you know,
it's the one I kind of like, Sean.
Okay. I haven't watched it yet. I have the signed Blu-ray and I have not watched it yet. I've failed. I'm going to watch it soon.
The soundtrack to this, I mean, first off, the cover with, you know, the Sphinx and kind of like the whole Hollywood feel and, you know, kind of the Vegas thing going on. And kind of the chainsaw earrings, I think is great.
Yeah.
Definitely, it's one of those soundtracks. It's very odd because it's very synthy and very just kind of I don't know. It sounds cheap. Not the vinyl by any means. I'm not talking about that. But I'm just saying the soundtrack. You like listen to the soundtrack on vinyl, and you're like, this sounds like it would probably belong with a really, like, kind of cheap, corny movie. And it does. It really does. It works. You know, but this is also one of those soundtracks that I think it works better with the film rather than listening to the soundtrack by itself. Just because you listen to it, people might walk in and be like, dude, what the fuck are you listening to? And then you say, oh, it's the Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, you know, soundtrack. And then people are like, oh, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know, that type of thing. But I don't know if I would be completely on board with something like this as far as, you know, like I said, just like listening to it. but nonetheless, kind of a very interesting choice from Mondo Deathwall to bring this one to the table. But also bravo for, you know, thinking outside the box and doing something different rather than, you know, releasing all the major ones that we know about. But definitely something to pick up. The big, you know, there's a girl's ass on the end of it, which is pretty sexy. But also another, you know, kind of, you know, short soundtrack. The cool thing about this is that they have all the A side is the score to the film, and the B side is actually all the additional stuff of all the, you know, songs that actually play in the movie.
Okay, that's cool.
So they kind of combine both, which I actually prefer the B side rather than the A side. Next, we have a really fucked up movie with a...
Absurd?
Beautiful, yes. Beautiful, beautiful soundtrack. Also, very beautiful vinyl. I mean, this is a double LP again, and you know, this thing is fucking blood fucking red. Like, it looks fucking great. It is, you know, it's heavy. I mean, the front cover of this is, if you don't not buy your computer, I suggest you look it up. But it's a guy fucking pulling out his guts and the intestine spellus.
Now, this is a pseudo sequel, or
yeah, this is the sequel to Anthropophagus. There you go,
Anthropophagus, a film that I bought and never watched.
Yeah, also I think it's also known as The Beast.
I don't know if I'll ever watch it. I don't know. I have certain things.
So another thing that Death Waltz did is beautiful. Is the first soundtrack is blood fucking red. And the next one just looks like it's drained, like someone drained the record, and it's just like this clear, dirty gray. So, you know, bravo. And, you know, the names of the songs are definitely not on here. It's just sequences. So sequence 1 through 21. But I tell you what, man, like, Absurd is a fucked up movie, and it's brutal, and when the music plays, it fits. But this is also another soundtrack where you can listen to the soundtrack alone and people are like, oh shit, this is really good. Like, this is like dinner party music.
So who's the... Is it Carlo Maria Cordio?
Yeah. You could play this at, like, a dinner party and people be like, oh yeah, this is really good. Who is this? Just because it's not too... Like, it does get a little insane at times during the soundtrack, but it's also like, you know, have you ever listened to fucking jazz? Like... It's fucking insane sometimes, like, and people have, but this soundtrack is, it's very relaxing when it's by itself. When you watch it with the movie, it's completely different. So when you listen to the soundtrack by itself, you keep thinking about all the fucked up shit and George Eastman going berserker in the film. But it works. It does. And, you know, the sequences are long. And I don't know, it's just a really chill soundtrack and I really dig it. Now this one I could totally see someone picking up because it is, you know, different and special. So I, if anything, honestly, out of the ones that we're talking about as far as purchasing vinyl, I would highly suggest this one for any film lover and soundtrack lover. This is by far one of the best soundtracks you'll probably hear, as well as some of the best work that Death Waltz has probably done. And I've listened to a good portion of Death Waltz record stuff, But I think this one definitely sets the bar pretty high. And like I said, it's all around a great soundtrack.
Very cool.
And of course, you know, we didn't talk too much about Cat in the Brain, but Cat in the Brain is another one of those things that is just really one long song, it feels.
Yeah, it's just, it's broken up, just like, Absurd, it's broken up into kind of these sequences.
Yeah, and, you know, it sounds great. Like I said, we talked about the movie, and I still think the movie was ahead of its time. I think there's something like Fulci was really trying to do that was different. I just think it was maybe too early to pull out the stops, he should have pulled out the stops and done it later in his career. But obviously, he probably wouldn't have got it because he would have been, you know, passed away. However, you know, another really fun soundtrack. That's actually, the soundtrack's way better than the movie. But another soundtrack, I mean, this vinyl, it's like fucking crazy looking. It's got cat teeth in the middle. And again, it just looks like a tie-dye, like pink and red and white. And just like kind of splattered everywhere. So definitely, I would definitely pick that one up if you're a fan of Frizzy, because maybe not the movie so much, but the soundtrack is definitely, I think the soundtrack is great. I think it's way better than the movie. It's way more enjoyable. It's one of those that you can just play, maybe not for friends and family and little kids when they're over, but definitely something that stands out. That's
a Cat in the Brain.
Yeah,
I was fun. Listening to it with my daughter.
I think it's a fun
soundtrack. Like a horror movie soundtrack. That's the thing.
It sounds very like I said, we even talked about like Maniac Cop, very childlike, you know, very cartoonish. So, do you get that vibe at all when you listen to
it? A little bit. I mean, towards the end of it, it starts going into the more kind of Frizzy sounding, you know, very similar to like The Beyond a little bit. But it never goes like dark. You know what I mean? It still does. It's kind of like the movie. The movie, even with the gore and stuff, it kind of has a weird playfulness in a way, because it's very.
Yeah. I think
it's a very kind of meta.
A good word.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know, it's very odd, but
I think I
had fun checking it out.
I think that's a good explanation. I really do. I think that's great. And then last stuff that I have here that, you know, we actually have and we've listened to on vinyl, because I don't really feel like reviewing vinyl that I haven't listened to for the show, because we don't do that with movies. is the Bloodstained Shadow Death Waltz Mondo release. Beautiful looking vinyl too, black with these red and blue kind of streaks across it. The Bloodstained Shadow, I think, was recent released on Blu-ray from 88 Films.
Yeah.
So this soundtrack, number one, this artwork all around on the front and back is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like I said, the vinyl already is gorgeous. With the soundtrack. It, you know, we're following kind of a giallo film to begin with. This soundtrack is wouldn't what you would think with a giallo film. It's very artsy fartsy, and just kind of crazy at times. It feels we all listen. I think that's the beauty about music, is that all of us can listen to something. We're listening to exact same thing. You know, and we all hear something different. I think that's amazing. Like, I've talked to a couple of people listening to the soundtrack. They're like, yeah, it sounds like a Giallo soundtrack. And I'm like, really? I don't really think so. I think it's some next level shit, to be honest with you. I think it fits with the movie because the movie itself is a little, kind of goes a different pace than, maybe your normal Giallo goes.
Yeah, I need to watch this. I own this Blu-ray, but haven't cracked it open yet.
Come on, Sean. What are you doing with your life?
It's been added to the to-watch pile.
Good.
It's within reach.
I'm glad. But definitely, it's a lot of fun and a good time. And another soundtrack that you can put on that's not... that's because with a lot of soundtracks, they're very antsy. They make you, a little nervous, get your heart racing, maybe something you don't want to play at a party. But the Bloodstained Shadow is something that you could put on, and I think it's totally a different speed than your normal Giallo soundtracks. And also cool. Another odd one to kind of choose from everything else that already exists out there. So.
Very nice. Yeah, this is good stuff, man. I haven't collected vinyl as much this year as I went through. It's kind of like you. Like, you kind of get into it and you start just going places and buying just a ton of shit. Like, my thing is, I've always been trying to collect movie soundtracks on vinyl. Movie soundtracks and hair bands are the two things that I collect on vinyl. And I haven't really gone out shopping for a while. So, but it's fun. I mean, it's almost like you need to have a ritual when you listen to vinyl. Like, it's different than just popping in a CD, because you have to take it out of the sleeve. You put it in the, on your, the record player, and, you bring the arm over and you set it down, and then set the needle down. You hear the nice little pop of the needle on the vinyl. It's just fantastic. And then you sit there with the artwork and this gigantic, the gigantic artwork, and sit and listen to the music and hang out. It's a different way to listen to music. And it kind of like, you kind of forget, the kind of the magic, I guess, music has, because it's all on our phones now, but to actually take the time and put on a record, it's relaxing to me.
Also,
I like it.
Kind of forces you to listen to the whole album.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
So, which is important, because, you got to get up, so people aren't as, likely to get up to flip it over. They want to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm a fan. I'm a tangible media fan anyway, but just having my little record collection makes me happy. Plus, it's hard, a lot of variables when you want to sell this crap, so it's like you're kind of stuck with it sometimes. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
Because you got to get the special box and make sure you're not sending a record out when it's 105 degrees outside. Make sure you know where you're sending it to. Wait, I did most of my record buying in like the fall and winter, because I bought a couple records during the summertime and they came warped because of the heat.
Yeah.
So it definitely makes you care about your investment for sure. So, you can go to mondotees.com and click on the music link. You'll be able to find all these there. I'm going to put all links to all of these in the show notes for you guys to check out. They have a ton more. I mean, the Aliens soundtrack, I fucking want that shit.
No, it's a good military
soundtrack.
Oh my
God. That's on my Christmas list for sure. But, and the Back to the Future score is great, but I already own the Back to the Future score original pressing, bitches.
Damn, Sean, you a badass.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I paid some good money for that too. It's probably cheaper by now, but now you can get it for a repressing for $35.
Yeah. And so, all three of them that look pretty cool next to each other.
Yeah, one of the prize soundtracks in my collection is the Conan the Barbarian soundtrack on vinyl. That thing is worth like $100, but the dude forgot to price it in the store, and He sold it to me for $20.
Damn, Sean, you a badass again.
Because he felt bad. He had a stack of other records. Yep. Wheeling and dealing. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's podcast. Hope you guys dug it. A little bit different. We're still talking about movies, just in a different context. So I think we should do this more, you know, every now and then, maybe.
Yeah, I think soundtracks are important.
Yeah. So check out Mondo, mondotees.com. Check these out. And I want to, I mean, they have just a ton of shit on here. God damn it, Mondo. I need to stop clicking around. I'll buy some shit.
Yeah, but, anyway, it's tough, man.
Remember that Wolfmen of Mars has a new album coming out September 16th. Go to wolfmenofmars.bandcamp.com. Also, please check out all of our other sponsors. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors. Check all of them out. Give them some love. Coffee Shop of Horrors. If you use the code SCREAMCAST10, you'll get 10% off of your order. If you go to coffeeshopofhorrors.com. Most of the time you'll find links to all the movies and shit that we talk about, linking over to grindhousevideo.com. Please give them some love. He let me know that he has a new distributor now, so his pricing is going to be, getting even better. So, some good stuff. He's doing, like, it makes me happy that he's doing well, you know? I mean, like, a year ago, dude, he was ready to close up the online shop. Like, he was ready to just shut it all down. And the fact that it's going and he's going strong and he's getting decent, he's getting great price points from distributors, that just makes me happy. So check out grindhousevideo.com and please support these types of stores. I always check them first before going over to Amazon, as you all should as well.
Yeah. Tell them, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Get them.
Also, Kevin Spencer, give him some love. Buy some of his art. And just follow him on Twitter. He's all around nice guy. Who else? Of course, Vinegar Syndrome and Exploitation TV. Please check them out. We're going to be doing our Vinegar Syndrome show hopefully next week. We're working out the details on that. And if you did your Exploitation.tv, if you did the Kickstarter or the Indiegogo, you're about to expire. The year has been up. So make sure you renew with exploitation.tv for a ton of smut at your fingertips. And also, if you're trying to build a horror collection, check out Horror Pack. I think it's it.
Damn, Sean.
Go to thescreamcast.com. You'll find all of our social media links there, including our new YouTube channel. I put another shitty video up on there, and by the time you guys are listening to this, Brad should have a video up there.
Oh god, let's not talk about that.
So like I said, we're still in the figure out what works phase, and of course you'll find back episodes to our podcast on there for your convenience. Those are also available on the website. And I made it available so instead of – I had it so like our podcast feed or whatever only went like 50 shows back for podcast catchers. I made it 300. So right now all of our stuff can be found on your podcatcher of choice. So you can listen to back episodes.
Thank you, Sean, for helping me out.
You're welcome.
So I can listen to myself.
Yeah. Just make sure you guys listen to the burning episode first. hilarious. That's the Brad got drunk on cider episode. And I think it's great. But don't start with that one. I don't know.
Definitely don't start with that one.
There's really not a starting point. Start anywhere you want. But that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll talk to all of you guys next time. Thanks for listening, and hopefully Skype isn't a bitch next week so BJ can join us for a longer period of time.
Agreed.
All right. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.